City. It's your man, Big Pat, the voice of your Charlotte Hornets, and you're listening to the All Hornets Podcast Network, presented by Sports Illustrated.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You are listening to Inside the Hive on the All Hornets Podcast Network, one podcast feed with multiple shows, making sure we cover the Charlotte Hornets from every angle. If you like what you hear, please subscribe at Apple Podcasts, leave a five-star review. The All Hornets Podcast Network is affiliated with the Fans First Sports Podcast Group. Today's show, me and Chase are joined by very special guest, Terrence Oglesby. You will know him from Hornets Live, from the Field of 68 College Basketball Podcast, CBS, Fox, ESPN. There's a lot of letters after your name here, Terrence. Terrence, thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, none of which are MD, which disappoints my mother. But outside of that, it's been a fun couple of years, guys. Thank you for having me. And this year with the Hornets has been an interesting one. It's something different. It's something I'd never done before, but it was a lot of fun and certainly a learning experience.
Thank you so much for coming on here, Terrence, from myself as well. I'm sure on top of the Hornets experience our fans have listening to you on the Hornets postgame and pregame show, I mean, we've got a ton of college basketball fans, I'm sure, in North Carolina. So they've probably been intimately familiar with your coverage from Field of 68. I've been following that myself for many years now. So very excited to have you on a podcast today. A lot of fields of expertise that we're going to cover today.
Yeah. I'm really – all North Carolina fans, by in general, love me. They love me. I'm hoping to like kind of settle some scores with the fact that like I work with the Hornets so they can like me a little bit. That's kind of the whole thing. No, I'm just joking. It's doing both is a lot of fun.
Good. Well, today you've come on the show. You're going to be talking a little bit about your experience kind of covering the Hornets this year, doing studio for Bally Sports, a little bit about what you think maybe the team needs going forward. Then we've got a little fun three-question quiz for you. And we're also going to get your thoughts on the draft as we start to pivot our coverage on the All Hornets podcast to the draft for the upcoming year. And you're going to be giving us your top three players that fit the Charlotte Hornets. So make sure you stay around for that in part two. But to kick us off with part one, Chase, over to you.
Terrence, I just want to start with your experience being on Hornets Live. You mentioned before we got on air here that you'd never really done studio work before, obviously called games, been on podcasts, but this is a little bit of a different setting and a much more like specific type of analysis that you have to give in that short amount of time, pregame, halftime, postgame. So I guess just overall, what was the experience like in your first year?
You know, it was a very positive experience. One of the things that people always go back and say it's not what you do, it's who you do it with. And, you know, Ashley, who I don't know if you guys have had on the podcast before, Ashley Shamedy's a superstar. I think she's great. I've worked with Eric Collins before doing college games with Valley whenever they used to have some packages with the ACC. I'd worked with him before. So we had some rapport. Del Curry, obviously, he's as nice as advertised. Like some people, you know, they put on a show for the cameras. Dell's not that guy. Like Dell's that nice, happy-go-lucky guy all the time. And the good part about Del Curry is there's not a whole lot to be sad about because his life's pretty good. Like both of his kids have had a terrific career. They've turned into, you know, great people. And, you know, there's some things in Dell's life that, you know, obviously he's very happy about here lately. So everybody is really nice. Eric Kendall, Stephen Daly, everybody in the back of the truck. It's been awesome. And now that I said all that, it was a different year for me. I'd never been on a desk. Having to focus in while everything's going on behind you. People are leaving. People are coming, taking pictures, screaming at Ashley. You had to deal with distraction, which I thought was fun. And to be honest with you guys, I wish like they would let people stand behind us, but for some reason that's a security thing. Yeah. That's a security thing. That's not us at Bally.
No, we know. This was something that I wrote an open letter. You probably didn't see it, but some of my followers and listeners. Yeah. And that was one of the things that a lot of people said is like, why let people go behind if they then just get ushered away? It looks terrible on TV. Like the little kid thinking, great, I'm going to be on TV. And then someone comes and pushes them away. Yeah, so I know what you mean.
That part's gross. And I've asked, but that's, and Ashley's asked, you know, the only problem that we run into is to open the season on game one, somebody got back there behind and threw up on camera. So, like, guys, actor age. Like, don't go back there. We're trying to help people out. Don't go on there and throw up dead center. Like, I got to smell it the rest of the show. Like, this is ridiculous. No, guys, I'm with you on that. I wish that they would let the people stand behind. I will say that Ashley has developed a following enough to where if they are going to do that, they probably need to barricade it a little bit further back because you wouldn't believe how many drunk dudes think they got a shot at a married woman. Like,
trusted season ticket holders, maybe that's the season ticket holder benefit, right? You get to go, or you know, I don't know, but yeah,
maybe. But no, here's the thing, like, no, it was a learning experience. You know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Like, the Hornets weren't very good this year. For that matter, guys, they were historically bad if you look at the analytics. So as a result of that, you had to find some diamonds in the rough. You had to get creative as far as your presentation. It forced me to do a lot of things that I had never done before. And for that reason, it helped me grow. It helped me do something different. And it gave me that experience of working with the same crew over and over and over again. And to be honest, up to this point, I had never done that. And I thought it was a fun adventure, a fun avenue. We will see what the future holds because that's still up in the air. But I enjoyed it. It was difficult. It was different. And, you know, the thing is I really enjoy calling games. I really enjoy being a part of the game. Doing that, while I did enjoy it, it took away. I had to turn down 15, 20 games during the course of the season. And that, to me, is, you know, I love doing that stuff. So that was difficult. But
would you ever have ambitions to do NBA, calling NBA games?
I love any kind of games. I love doing any of that stuff. And guys, I'm good at that. I feel like I'm better at calling games than I am doing studio, but that opportunity never presented itself. Dell did all 82 games because Dell is a machine. He is unbelievable. He's a great person. He never gets sick and he plays golf. So like he does it all. But no, I would have interest in doing something like that. I just, the opportunity has never presented itself. And I'm a big believer in being really good where you're at the time that you're there. So while I would have liked to have done that, I wasn't presented with that opportunity. So that's neither here nor there. But it was a fun ordeal being with the Hornets this year. By and large, just a different experience of seeing how they prepare. Because, you know, people don't know this, but I basically played at every level except for the NBA. Like, I was in the G League. Played in Europe for a while. I didn't quite make the Euro League, but like I flirted around in the Euro Cup with teams that like, you know what I mean? Like I've played at every level. Played was a big time college guy, and I never got to get to the NBA. And to be able to see that experience from a different angle, kind of what guys go through, it was very unique and very fun, to be honest with you. It was a fun experience.
Well, you never quite sunk to the levels of the British Basketball League, Terrence. So I won't say you've played quite at all levels just yet.
Hey, my man Dante Grantham is killing over there for London. So he's playing well. That's my guy. Dante Grantham's a great dude. And hey, they're finally investing some money over there in the UK. So that's a good thing.
The only problem is the owners 777 Sports for the follow it are in all sorts of financial potential trouble for next year. But they have done. They're just, you know, they're doing well at the moment. You talked about the challenge of covering the season. I guess I think one thing to reflect on, what I liked seeing your coverage was that you were honest and direct, which I think sometimes you don't always get that, right? You get like the presentation of like, oh, well, you know, they just need to play a good fourth quarter when they're down like 25 points again for the third night in a row. And I think that's what I think fans really liked. And I imagine it has to be a hard balance, right? Because you can't be on there being negative, but equally you want to be honest and true to yourself and say things how they are at times. How is finding that balance?
Well, I kind of got a little bit of grace because Steve Clifford was so honest and direct. So that was kind of the thing. Cause like they call North Carolina Hoop State. Like, this isn't an ignorant fan base. This is a fan base that understands what they're looking at. They understand hoop, and the fact that they kept showing up, guys, is a miracle in itself. So, like, they understand what they're looking at. They would see right through the BS, and there's been BS before me, apparently, because that's what people had said, that I was a bit refreshing because I would tell the truth. And if they're playing bad, you have to say they're playing bad, or else people just see right through it. And I'm not a big fluff guy. Like, I'm going to tell you what I see, and if I get fired for it, that's okay. That's fine. But, like, it's a thing where I don't want to lie to the fans. I'm not going to be overly pessimistic because my job is to keep you watching, basically. So there's a salesmanship portion of this, too, while also being direct and explaining the game for what you see it is. So it is a fine line. It is a balance. There have been times this year where after I was done with my segment, I would talk back to my producer and I'd be like, hey, was that a little too harsh? And he'd be like, well, let's see what Steve Clifford say. And then Steve would go on there and just blast it. So it all turned out to be okay because of that. So, you know, that part is difficult because, like, guys, you know, there's a certain amount of pride that you take in saying, like, hey, I help broadcast the Charlotte Hornets. And you want the Hornets to be good because if the Hornets are good, there's more eyeballs. So, like, there's a competitive aspect to that, and that's been new to me. So that's kind of the thing where there would be some nights where you could see, like, arbitrary name, let's throw out there, Bryce McGowan's, who's really young, they would need him to step up in a big time, and he just couldn't. It wasn't that he wasn't trying. It wasn't that it was an effort play. It was just come on, guys, like, we have to have something. We have to have 8 to 10 points some here by somebody, and they just couldn't get over that hump. And I think that's a lot of those frustrations came from the unwillingness to spin by Jordan, which I think will be changed here soon. And then I also think, like, you know, with a rejuvenated franchise, new ownership, Jeff Peterson stepping in the situation, I think it's going to become better. But like I said, to go back to your question, because I tend to ramble, as you guys probably well know, like, it is a delicate balance. But I also I can't think the audience is stupid, but I also want to keep the audience there. So it's kind of a yang, right? Like, there's a certain balance that you have to play.
And I will say, you say that your job is to keep the audience watching. I think you, Ashley, Eric, Dell, that is partly, I think, once you got past game probably 40, that is what people were watching for. So I think you all did a great job on that.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm not included on all these Hornets Reddits and all these things. So I know I'm just an ancillary piece. It's very much their show. It is very much Dell, Ashley, and Eric. And, like, that's okay with me because being a new guy and just trying to fit my role and fit a part has paid dividends. I think it's paid dividends for the show, and it's also pay dividends for me in terms of experience doing just that.
So having watched all these games over the last couple months, Terrence, and having that pro experience yourself, being an analyst at college basketball, pretty much every level of basketball you've played, analyzed, probably gives you a pretty good idea, especially of when you're watching, of what this team may need going forward to improve and bring in more eyeballs. So you guys are one of those broadcast crews that's, you know, not having to make that delicate balance. Is there anything in specific that stood out to you over the course of the year, whether that's like a player in specific or just a style of player or like a philosophical decision that they should change going forward to get this train back on the track here?
Well, they need a new training staff. They need to get people in there who are going to take care of the players. And there needs to be some belief between player and some connection with the training staff that can help get guys healthy and play. Because having – how many games did LaMelo play? It was 20-something games. The year before that, it was 30-something.
Yeah.
You got to play more. Like, dude, you just got max money. You got to play. Like, I think the philosophical thing is, hey, LaMelo, do you want to play? Do you want to be that guy? So that's your philosophical decision. Is LaMelo Ball going to play? Because although it is a rebuild, like, you get those guys healthy again. You get Mark Williams healthy. You get LaMelo healthy. Cody Martin, if you can get him healthy for an entire year, Brandon Miller and not PJ, but Miles, like, that's a legitimate starting five. in a modern NBA. Like Miles is probably an undersized four, but he's got some switchability to him. And there's not really many back to the basket fours anymore. And so like, that's a legitimate starting five. And with the people they brought in at the deadline, there's pieces there that can come off the bench and provide value. So you got a good training staff. You got to get healthy. That's numero uno. And you got to have guys that want to be there. I think LaMelo like proved to us that you want to play NBA basketball at this point. Because guys, in my opinion, like he hasn't exhibited that, especially since he got to sign that big contract. Like you're earning all that money. That money's in your pocket now, or it's about to be. Show us why you deserve that money. And you got to play more than 20 games. And, you know, there's going to be nights where you don't feel great. You have to play those nights. So that's number one. Number two is you have to provide quality depth, not just 6, 7, 8, but in the NBA, as long as the season is, because there are going to be injuries. There are going to be guys missing 5, 6, 7 games. Well, you still have to try to play them and win those games. So I think quality depth, veteran depth is a big thing. And I'll be honest, guys, like, I've been around Charlotte. I've lived in Atlanta. There's a lot to sell with Charlotte. I understand it's a small market. It's not Los Angeles. It's not New York. It's not Las Vegas eventually, but like, it's a good place to live. It's a heck of a fan base who's passionate. In my opinion, there's a lot to sell in Charlotte. Bring some of these veteran pieces to Charlotte and help them understand some things. I think Grant Williams is really going to help with those things, just from a culture aspect, some of these different things. You know, look, Grant probably talked too much for Luka's liking. While Grant wasn't needed in Dallas for what he brings both on and off the court, it was a chef's kiss moment whenever he was brought to Charlotte, him and Seth Curry. Like, you bring both of those guys in, guys who know how to be pros, to a bunch of guys that, like LaMelo, doesn't know how to be a pro yet, which is alarming considering the circumstance. You bring those guys in, and now you gradually start to change the personnel to a culture that really fits the need of winning. And it's been a long time since Hornets have won. And I think eventually they can get there. And I think there's general optimism, not just from me, guys, but I think around the city of Charlotte, the state of North Carolina, with the new excitement, the upgrades in the practice facility, the arena, they've showed the willingness to spend. They've shown the willingness to upgrade the fan experience. And alongside that, you don't just put all that money in to put a crap product on the floor. And what's going to end up happening is people are going to end up wanting to come there.
And you talk about kind of investing into the team. Obviously, the coaching vacancy is out at the minute. I mean, you will have seen, just like everybody else, the rumored interview names. Are there any kind of names that you are hoping for or keeping out for in this coaching search at the moment?
So the Budenholzer thing coming out and saying he's want like $15 million a year. I don't understand that. And here's what you guys are looking at. You're looking at a new franchise that's hiring a lot of new names. And sometimes there's a name out of Boston. I'm not saying I've heard anything because I haven't. But that coach out of Boston, who sometimes when things go radio silent, the decision's been made. And they're just not telling anybody yet. So I would be shocked if – what's the guy's name again?
Charles Lee.
I'm having a brain fart because I'm sitting in a parking lot. But but sometimes in my experience doing college stuff, now this is an NBA experience, this is college stuff. When things go that quiet, typically the decision's already been made and we're waiting for things to play out. And I think that's okay at this point. You know, there's no need to hurry into a decision. Jeff Peterson's very confident heading into the draft. So, you know, they're going to put together a good team. I would venture to guess that they go younger. That would be my initial guess. And I think Charles Lee is going to be that guy eventually. Not that I've heard anything, but all signs kind of point that direction, not just with that stuff, but to go along with Budenholzer wanting $15 million a year over 7 years. Like, that's just not going to happen. Like, I know they threw the, you know, they upped the money for head coaches when Monty signed in Detroit, but look where that got him. So,
well, exactly.
Yeah, look where they're going.
You think a guy like Bird is going to want to, you know, you're paying you're coming to a place where you're probably not going to win in the first couple of years, tax on that. Whereas he will probably be hoping out for maybe a bigger job, one of these people who falls out of the playoffs. So, very interesting. I saw that also report coming out of, because Budenholzer is obviously in the mix for the next job. And and there was that report out there. So very interesting. And Charles Jordy, Lee is the guy.
Didn't Jordy get the Nets job already?
He did, yep. Yeah. But Budenholzer was in contention and then essentially said that he wanted a lot of money over a lot of years, was the quote I heard from Brian Lewis, who covers the Nets on the beat. He said he wanted a lot of money over a lot of years, and it was just kind of a non-starter, especially when you're not like a championship team. You're not going to be that in Brooklyn. You're not going to be that in Charlotte. It's one thing if you need that name to like push you over the top, right? But these are two teams that are kind of far away from being anything really relevant.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think you get a young guy that he can grow alongside your young players. I think that's a big thing. But you also get a young guy who understands how hard he can push and when he needs to. And that's kind of a tough thing to measure whenever guys have been assistant coaches the whole time, right? So I think Charles Lee gets the job eventually. I could be completely wrong, guys. I want to preface everything I say. I could be completely wrong there. I haven't been told a thing. But the way some of these things usually go is when it gets quiet and there's been a guy who's been rumored to be the front runner and then nobody says anything, that's typically how it goes. And I equate it, and for better or worse, a couple of years ago, Kevin Willard was at Seton Hall and he ends up going to Maryland. Well, the Maryland search went dead silent for 2 months until Seton Hall finished their Big East tournament. And then they also finished their NCAA tournament run. So it was like, sometimes the decision's been made. It's just a matter of who that guy's going to be.
Understood. I'm curious just to go back to the season for a little bit. Can you pinpoint maybe a high point or a low point of the season in your role on Hornets Live, whether it was like a specific moment of time or a game which was like a big win or a perfectly, you know, destructive loss? Can you think of that? Anything pop to mind?
High point was the trade deadline, without the shadow of a doubt. Without a shadow of a doubt, because when they brought those names in and then were at the same time able to accumulate picks and accumulate draft capital, that was like, oh, man, we have some owners that are going to be aggressive. We have some owners that are going to be willing to spend. And that was to me kind of like the eyebrow raising moment to where, hey, we understood what Charlotte was in the mood for. Like, they were looking to acquire draft capital and assets. They weren't necessarily looking to get better. And Rick Shaw has said that. But the fact that they were able to do that and continue to get better, I thought was really promising. I think they reeled off like four in a row right before the All-Star break. And of course, the All-Star break comes and they just kind of, you lose your momentum. But that was certainly the high point, because you saw tangible progress. And even though they went back, you know, everything reverts back to the norm, but like at the set, not to the norm, but to the mean, you know, there wasn't quite enough talent to win like a ton of games, but there was enough to squeeze a couple extra out because there was now depth. I think that was fun. The low point was prior to the deadline. I want to say they got beat by 50.
Philly? They've lost by 50 plus to Philly. It was the biggest loss in franchise history. I can't remember guys, when that was, but I know it happened.
I think it was like 11 in a row they lost going into the deadline.
Can I curse on this?
Absolutely.
You do what you need to do to cover.
Dude, whenever Joel Embiid saw Nick Richards in front of him, he was like, hey, it's barbecue time and I'm ready to eat. And my man went for like 35 in the first quarter, and I go in at halftime and I'm just like, what the hell am I supposed to talk about here? Holy shit. And then they just kept coming.
Some second half adjustments to Nathan Mensa. No, was that
hey, Nathan Mensa, credit to him, man. He comes in, he plays hard. He's just not an NBA player.
He's just not.
And guys, look, when I say that, I mean that lovingly. Nathan Mensa can go play in France's top division and be a really good player. He's just not an NBA player. That was a tough one to cover. That was a low one for me, because like, what am I going to do here? And we were just like, hell with it. We're just going to talk about Joel Embiid the whole time because he might be the best player on the planet when he's healthy. So that was without the shadow of a doubt the low point for me.
Good. Chase, anything else before we move on him?
No, I think we're good. Let's shift into part two here.
So Terrence, we have a little three question quiz for you here, and you've unknowingly bigged yourself up by talking about how you actually go back with Eric Collins quite some way.
Yeah.
So surely, Terrence, you should know Eric's quotes and his one line is that he gives better than anybody. So we're going to give you here a kind of two quotes. One of them is a real Eric quote and one of them is not real. And
okay.
We need you to tell us and pick us which is
the real one. I like this a lot. Yep.
So this is the first one. It's either he's sharper than a hacksaw or he flosses with barbed wire.
He flosses with barbed wire. I've
absolutely
heard that one.
One for one. Well done. You knew that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Chase, over to you.
All right. Number two, with the touch of a masseuse or fell down like a slinky.
I'm going to go with a touch of masseuse. Is that one?
That is two for two. You are correct.
There we go.
All right. Just as long as you don't bring in the time that somebody made a mistake and he called it a boner, which he said something along the lines. He goes, it was like, Nate Mensa with a boner. And I was like,
pulling the headset off. Like, point, like, did you hear that, right?
Like, man, some of this stuff, you know, it's funny because, like, they kind of keep things going. Like, a boner, by the way, is not what us three, like, know a boner to be. A boner is an old baseball term for an error. Like, people don't realize. People don't know that.
A
lot of people don't know that. That's an old baseball term for an error, a boner. And then, obviously, because we are the way we are, we turn it into something different. But he said that. And then Dell one time, he goes, these guys are out here free-balling. So during the games, I walk back and forth between like the atrium where mine and I sit beside Dell and Eric. So and I have a headset and I sit beside them because I just like listening to them because I think they're funny and I can keep some continuity between what they're saying in the show. But free balling, and I look right at Dell, and Dell looks at me, and he just smiles, and he goes, "Play them freely. They're playing freely." So it's a good group. And hey, look, whenever you're 8-32 at home, or 9-31, whatever it was, like you got to keep it light, and they do that.
You do.
So
that's right.
I remember there was the famous Grady Dick one. I can't remember what it was exactly, but Eric Collins definitely had that one locked up and ready to go when he was commentating the play-by-play for Grady Dick. okay, your last one. Cooler than a milkshake in a snowstorm or calmer than in the eye of a hurricane?
Calmer in the eye of the hurricane because cooler than a milkshake in a snowstorm is an Outkast lyric.
Okay, you are incorrect. The Eric Collins was the...
Then he took it. Then he stole it.
He stole it. Then you can tell him next time. You just get all your lines from Outkast songs. That must be a secret.
Yeah, well, I'm in Atlanta right now, and I'm a huge Outkast fan. But cooler than a milkshake in a snowstorm. That's an Outkast line.
Very good. Well, you went 2 for 3, Terrence. Pretty good job there. I've been keeping a track of every single funny metaphor quote that Eric has made for the last 3 seasons. I have a note on my phone, which is about 60-something lines long. So, we've been waiting for a chance to kind of bring those out and show him. So
the great thing about Eric, and people don't know this, but like for game days at home, like we have to be there at 4:30, and I usually get there at 4 because I try to get up there before traffic hits. And I told you guys off air, like I live an hour and a half away, so like I try to get up there a little early. And so he'll come in and just wax poetic about a game that happened in 1983 and not the leading scorer, but the fourth leading scorer who had a big steal with 3.5 minutes to go. Like he's a savant, like when it comes to some of these things. And we're just like, and then it'll flash straight from that game to like some rock band in 74 who did something crazy that went to a basketball game the following week. Like you're only scratching the surface of some of the things that Eric Collins says. I mean, it's great.
That 2 out of 3 meatloaf special line that he has for when a player makes 2 out of 3 free throws, like that is the type of crossover that only an elite broadcaster can make. Like nobody is pulling references like that out of their head, like at the drop of a hat, but Eric does. And that is why he is as good as he is.
Yeah. He is a different guy. And the thing is he's enjoyable for fans to listen to. He can keep it light while things are not so good. And his energy is unmatched. Like we called a Georgetown game last year together in between like some certain things. And some of these, I'm not going to say which game it was, but like we won't even be at the venue. We'll be in Charlotte calling it out of a Fox studio. and like somebody will have a dunk and it's just an okay dunk, but he stands up, his cheer flies back, screaming and just making it interesting. So it's a joy to work with him.
Well, I just hope the Hornets or Bally or whatever broadcast partner is broadcasting games next year kind of can retain Eric, because that would be one of the biggest losses of the offseason if he wasn't able to be back. So fingers crossed.
From what I understand, Eric's going to be back. From what I understand, that's not breaking news, but I've never
exhale, everybody.
Yeah, I don't think I think the majority of everybody's coming back.
Great. Well, that is.
I don't know that. I don't know everybody's contract situation, but I wasn't told otherwise. So.
Okay.
You know, I think a lot of the speculation happened when Eric was waxing poetic about how good Ashley is, and she is very good, and she's going to have other opportunities, guys. Like,
it was the exact line that made me worry was when he went, "We have to make sure we savor every single moment that we get with Ashley Shavadi," and that's the one where I was like, "Why are we savoring the moment? What's going on here? Like, why do we have to savor these moments?" So
well,
much?
She's talented. Ashley's going to get paid, man. Like, she deserves to get paid. She's really good. She's grown into that role so well. And people don't know this. Ashley's, like, 6 feet tall. So, like, it doesn't look weird whenever she's, like, like interviewing players and stuff. And
because when I went to a Hornets game a few years ago, I was sat on the seat literally next to Ashley where she sits in the corner. I was in, like, the corner seat in the railing. And she stood up, and I was like, oh, Ashley's tall.
She's tall. She's tall. Yeah. It shocked me, too. She's almost as tall as I am. But she's really good. She's going to get paid. And I think there's something to be said for, like, hey, she needs to do the responsible thing and make sure there's nothing else available. And as far as her contract situation, I'm not even going to dive into that. But I don't know exactly the play there, but I know she's very talented. And people like Ashley are very coveted in this industry.
All right, Terrence, let's move on to part two, the draft part of the podcast here. I guess as we move into draft season, we're going to hear a lot of content about the draft. So I guess it would be kind of good to get some of your thoughts here. You're going to give us your top three players that you think fit the Charlotte Hornets. But before we get into that, Chase, I'm going to hand over to you for the first question.
So I'm especially curious to hear your take on this, Terrence, given your the expertise watching college and NBA basketball, how that's going to translate from one level to another. The narrative on this draft is not positive, to put it lightly, especially at the top. It's not really viewed as a draft that's going to turn any real all-NBA or perennial all-NBA guys, definitely not a Wemby, a Brandon Miller, Scoot, Chet Holmgren that we've gotten the last couple of years, at least from what we can tell now. But what is your take on the strength of this draft as a whole, maybe even? Obviously, the top is the top, but there is definitely some value to be found at certain points of this draft.
No, I agree. I agree. There is value to be found. And guys, like, the thing with the Hornets is like, if you're able to get the number one pick, I think Saar is a worthy, like, longtime player. Like, going to be in the mix, can defend. He's 7 feet. He can do a lot of good things for the Hornets. If they were able to get lucky enough to grab him, I mean, versatile 7-footers are pretty valuable. like that's kind of where we're at with that. If you look at this draft, I don't think there's the top end MVP caliber guy. But what I do think is there's a lot of guys kind of in that CJ McCollum, Kirk Heinrich, long-time high-end role players, if you will. There are pieces that will play 10 to 12, 15 years in the NBA. I think there's a lot of role player potential. I think there's a lot of guys in the top five or six that may get, you know, an all-star game invite or two. That's possible. But I think, you know, and quite frankly, guys, and I love that saying, quite frankly, like where I think Charlotte needs value is in those ancillary pieces. Well, I think this draft provides that. It doesn't have a Wemby. It doesn't have a Brandon Miller. It has a lot of really, really good players. And you also need really, really good players to win, right? So that's kind of where I'm at as far as this draft is concerned. I think there's a lot of good players. I don't necessarily think there's a ton of greatness. And I hate the fact that everybody's saying, well, it's just a terrible draft. It's a terrible draft. That's fine. As far as superstar power is concerned, yes, that is the case. as far as just not having NBA players, that's wrong, because there are a lot of good players.
It's certainly interesting. You mentioned about Alex Saar there. So I think I probably have Alex Saar ranked number one at the moment as well. I have two questions, though, which I'm still wrestling with, right? Is one, like, will the shot ever come online? Is this a skilled stretch 7'2" guy, or is this a person like the shot is something that will never ever translate to NBA level? And then, like, is he going to be able to play the five? Is he going to be able to play center? Like, his defensive rebounding production is not good at all, and he plays like a lot of power forward center. There's a lot of debate around that. So that's kind of like, because if he can play the five and then he can shoot, then I think he's a no-brainer number one pick, because he can switch, he can defend. You know, he's got some touch. What are your thoughts on those elements of Saar around, kind of like, from what you've been able to see?
Well, ideally, he's a four. He's a 7'2" okay. four, because he's thin around the waist. He moves really well. Yeah. He's got long arms, broad shoulders, built similarly to Mark Williams, but just not like, they're just not very wide humans. He's more of a skill guy than he is a power guy. So, you know, the center position is very difficult in the NBA right now. The game has switched back to going big, by and large, and people are finding creative ways to get their fives involved, even though they're not, you know, necessarily scorers. So you have to have that position. My biggest concern is I don't think he's ever going to be big and wide and really tough enough to be physical with a Jokic or point of attack guy with Joel Embiid, because he could just beat you in so many different ways. He's not this big, bulky guy. But what I do think is he's a switchable four at 7'2" or whatever. It'll be interesting to see. I think he's a very good player that could play for a long time. He is going to have to rebound better, but keep in mind too, like, when some of these kids come over from Australia or they're rookies over there, they're being told to box out instead of go get it. So, you know, rebounding is certainly a concern, but at the same time, I'm not sure that's something that can be taught, but at the same time, you can kind of gear ways around for him to be better on the glass.
One thing that I'm really curious about with Saar as well, and I'd be curious to hear your take on this too, Terrence, is for me, and I know James feels this way as well, like, physicality and just the ability to deal with like big, strong dudes on opposing teams was something that the Hornets front court like kind of lacked, especially 2 years ago, but even this year, like, Mark and Nick are big dudes.
You're playing Grant Williams at the five. Yeah.
Right. Because he's the most, he's 6'5" on a good day, probably. He's the strongest, most physical guy you have. My only worry is, like, adding Saar to that group, while he certainly has positives that, like, Mark Williams or Nick don't have as, like, a feel for the game guy. He's way more mobile on the perimeter. I don't know. Something about it just makes me a little bit nervous to add another guy that maybe struggles to guard those bigger dudes, especially putting him alongside Mark. Like, I don't know. I've just been thinking about that a lot more lately, and the way that you worded it brought it back up into my forefront of my mind again. But I feel like he's also like he might just have enough offense to outweigh that in a certain way.
Yeah.
Whereas Mark is not a passer. He's not a shooter. Right. Exactly. It's going to be like a very curious question to answer for Charlotte Hornets front office members.
What I will say is, well, layup lines don't win you games. It would be nice to see a little bit more size on the floor. You know, that's kind of the deal there. They need more size. I'm not going to skip ahead to another question, but if you look at the Orlando Magic, for example, who've done the bulk of their work through the draft, and they've gotten long and athletic at every position, and they kind of make things work. If I were working through the draft, I would try to model myself a little bit after that, just because of, you know, just the size discrepancy is going to make up for some things. In Orlando, they just got smacked on the road. But, gosh, everybody seems to get smacked on the road first game of the playoffs. But you get what I'm saying. Like, the size, the athleticism, if you don't play hard, you just don't play. So, I think worst-case scenario, offensively, you're looking at a Jonathan Isaac. Worst-case scenario. And I'm a Jonathan Isaac fan because I think he could defend because he's so huge and long. So, like, I think Sarr could eventually get to where he's guarding well on the perimeter, and then he's going to be a good enough shooter to keep teams at least honest. So
it's a great call.
Same size, same length, both move well. You know, Isaac is a little tougher, but it's not something that I don't think could happen with more, you know, physical growth across the shoulders.
Okay, take us on to your next prospect here, Terrence. Who would you have next on your wish list for the Charlotte Hornets?
I sent you three, didn't I? I can't remember. So Reed Shepard is another guy, and one of the reasons is out of Kentucky, freshman, much better athlete than people initially think, because they see this mop-headed kid, and they're just like, this kid's not a good athlete, and he just goes up and dunks on your head. Like, he's a good player. And the fact that he was so good this year with Kentucky, despite the circus that was around him, says a lot. And you think that, and he's going to play, because that dude loves to play, and he's going to play the right way consistently. In a draft where there's no absolute superstars, what do you want? Somebody with a high floor. Well, I think Reed Shepard has a high floor, and he's going to battle through and try to play every freaking game, where you know LaMelo's not going to play every game. So it's like, You get some stability for your backcourt. You know, Vasa was really good. He's not a great athlete, but I think that Reed can come in and be a part-time starter, where I think Vasa is going to be at his best playing against second units. So I would look at Reed Shepard, see what he can do there. I think he's a really, really talented player that defends, that's really, really good in the passing lanes. He's going to have to learn some NBA concepts defensively, because conceptually he wasn't great in college, but he was also playing for Calipari, who's traditionally not great in concepts defensively. But it's, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how he moves forward. But I think I want a high floor prospect. I think Reed Shepard fits that bill.
I think if you completely remove basketball from the situation entirely, right, and just look at intangibles, like the narratives that surround a player, there might not be a better fit for the Hornets in this draft than Reed Shepard. Yeah. Like, the type of attitude that he's going, maybe Cam Spencer for a second round pick, but if you got either one of those guys, the type of attitude that those guys are going to bring to your locker room is like quite literally a breath of fresh air. Like, there is nobody that's been on this team in the last 3 or 4 years, even much less currently, maybe Grant Williams, that's going to bring that type of like hard-nosed toughness to practice, like not just games, mm-hmm. but every single day when they show up. That to me, that might be enough of a sell on Reed Shepard alone. If someone like Sarr, Topich, Reese Shea, Cody Williams, whoever, if those guys are gone, like just getting a guy like that in your building might be the best play.
Just professionalism.
Yeah.
Show up to work. You know what I mean? Like, another guy who's like that, Seth Curry's a lot like that too. He shows up. He's not the most outspoken guy. He's not like his dad, but like, he's going to show up to work. He's going to do his job. He's going to knock down shots, going to play defense, he's going to go home. Like, we're not asking for much. We're asking people to do their job. So like, you know what I mean? Like, that's kind of where I'm at. No, I Reed passes all those tests from an intangibles perspective. The other guy I was talking about is Topich out of Serbia. I've talked to his agents. This is a really talented kid, and you need guys that can take over a game for spurts, especially if they're not option 1-2. If you can have that guy kind of like now he's better from what I've been told, but Bogey Bogdanovich, who can take over a game for an extended period of time while Trey's on the bench, you need a guy like that. I think Topich fills that need, plus he's got size. Now, he's just coming off an injury, which is a little concerning, but at the same time, these knee injuries aren't what they used to be. Big and skilled and terrific passers certainly help, but he's got kind of like this awkward game. His dad was a longtime player in the EuroLeague, but he was just kind of this awkward, ran funny kind of guy, but he just knew the game. Topich, his son's the same way. So I'm curious to see how he goes forward. I would look at that, because big size that can play, make, and score and are smart enough defenders usually fit well. And so those would be my three. If you guys asked for three, those would be my three.
I think two things I want to talk a little bit about. Reed Shepard, the one thing, like, you look, you go, oh, he's 6'2". But what I think continues to get underrated in the NBA is not size, but strength and body and thickness. And Reed Shepard might be 6'2", but he is thick and he is strong.
And boy,
how often, How often do we see these Patrick Beverley, Kyle Lowry, like these thick-bodied guys who just find ways to like be defensive pests, to finish at the rim, to use their size? So I think that's one thing I really like about Reed. The thing about Topic is everyone will go, oh, yeah, but look, he shoots 28% from three. You can throw that number.
Be careful with that, bin. Yeah.
Right, because I've watched, I went on Synergy earlier this year and I watched all 72 Nikola Topic three-point attempts. That guy takes like grade A-plus difficulty attempts. Like when he caught catch and shoot, I'm actually going to go back and track him at some point, but when he just had catch and shoot attempts, he is shooting high 30s, 40s at the pro level. He is taking late clock attempts, you know, those numbers are definitely skewed. And that's probably also why, you know, that the scoring might be a little bit higher because of that usage. But I definitely think there is a, he was being pushed into a role in that team that he was on, which he was trying to fulfill. So I think that's just one thing.
Which team did you watch him play for? Was he playing for Mega?
Mega when okay. he was on loan.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So Mega's an interesting, that's an interesting thing. So that's with a lot of young players and they let those guys spread their wings, especially their top picks. That's an interesting scenario. So that's a good catch by you because he's not going to be asked to do that. He is going to be asked to play make, but he's not going to have to take some of these difficult shots. And if you can catch and shoot, you're playing alongside LaMelo in the 60 games that hopefully he can play next year. Like that's going to turn into a positive.
Yeah. Well, Terrence, we've already held you here longer than we said we were going to. We appreciate your time so much. I hope you are recharged and on the go, ready to go after this podcast. But there is nothing else for me. Chase, anything else before we get out of here?
Thank you so much for coming on, Terrence. This was a great episode getting to talk to you about all things Hornets college basketball. Hope you enjoyed it as much as we did having you on here.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad somebody's getting their apartment renovated right beside you. So that's good.
Yeah, right. They picked the perfect time. I mean, I will admit, like, we started this podcast at 11. That drill was going at 11:01. So they were on time. They were ready to work. Maybe the Hornets could take a little bit from the people that are renovating the apartment below me.
Well, Terrence, we hope that you are back here next year. I know you said questionable right now, but we hope we'll be back. And hopefully when you are back, you'll be able to come back on the All Hornets podcast.
No, guys, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. My phone does some funny things when I'm in the car, and you got me on a day I'm traveling. So appreciate you guys. Thank you for putting up with me for, what was it? I only did 40 of the 41 games this year. But thank you for putting up with me, and it's been fun. It's been fun. We shall see what the future holds, and maybe I can be on an All Hornets podcast again one day.
We hope so. We hope so too, Terrence. Have a good offseason.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Terrence.